Welcome, everybody, to the New Earth Podcast. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us today. We have a really, really exciting call for you. We have a lot in store. And we have an expert joining us on the call today to talk about the product Energize, the product that we just were promoting throughout February for a heart healthy month. And I'm really excited about this podcast because I think there's a lot of general understanding of what is coenzyme Q10. But what's really underneath the surface? What's really going on with this incredible product? And why is ubiquinol, what is sold through New Earth, superior, as we talk about in our marketing materials, to ubiquinone? Well, today, you're going to hear it from the horse's mouth, as it were. You are going to hear from Dr. Robert J. Berry, PhD. Dr. Berry is, hands down, one of the leading experts of anybody in the world. I don't say that lightly, of anybody in the world on ubiquinol as a supplement. And I'm really excited to have him. He serves as the Executive Director of Scientific Affairs for Conica Nutrients. That's the company that we work with to supply our ubiquinol. And he's spent a lot of time focusing his clinical research development and collaboration on the development of the technical and business and commercial translation of products and technology for Conica. So basically, when they want to do something, they talk to him about how to get it done. And Conica, as you may or may not know, is the world's leading supplier of coenzyme Q10. And of course, Dr. Berry was a principal advisor for the National Institute of Health, specializing in the commercial development of biotech startup companies, their technologies and their products. He also founded and served as president of a premier independent testing laboratory and scientific research company that serve the natural products industry. So he gets where we come from and the things that we as consumers care about. He brings more than 20 years of strategic technical development and commercial translation of scientific products, analytical services, drug development, and preclinical evaluation systems to this position. And on top of it all, he has a bachelor's degree in biology from Boston College, his PhD in chemistry and biochemistry from the University of Maryland, postdoctoral research in biological chemistry and molecular pharmacology at Harvard Medical School. And I cannot tell you more strongly than maybe I just have, if there is someone you want to talk to about ubiquinol, this is the guy. So thank you very much, Dr. Robert Berry, for being on the call with me today. I really appreciate it.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
So that's a lot of letters and a lot of background on everything that you have done in the past and some of your work. And I got to tell you, Doctor, it's pretty impressive.
Oh, thanks. Hopefully I can accommodate that for our conversation.
Well, I think so. So here's what I wanted to start off with today. We talked a little bit about this before we got onto our call. A lot of people know about ubiquinone, and maybe they've heard the word ubiquinol, but they have definitely heard of CoQ10, right? Coenzyme Q10. And they've heard it as a supplement that can be added to their diet. But maybe people don't know some of the true depth that is behind that particular ingredient. And I read your book, and on top of all the letters, you also wrote a book called The Power of Ubiquinol. And I would recommend to everybody to take the time. It is worth the read. It is fascinating. And I was wondering if you could just illuminate for us the real position that ubiquinol, and particularly the kind that we are talking about marketing, the presence that that has in the field of nutritional supplements. Why is it so much better than maybe people have considered?
Well, actually, let me simply, first of all, ubiquinol is absolutely critical. For cardiac health, for health in general, for any aerobic system, any aerobic cell that includes humans, it's literally critical. If you don't have ubiquinol, you won't exist. You won't live. And that's how important it is. How important is it as a supplement? We produce ubiquinol in our bodies very efficiently when we're young. This is the active antioxidant form of CoQ10. We produce CoQ10 and it's immediately converted into ubiquinol. When you are young, say in your teens, and healthy, you produce as much CoQ10 and ubiquinol as you need, and you need it for two things generally. Cellular energy and cellular protection. We can get into that a bit later on. And that conversion is very efficient. The caveat is that as we grow older, that's into our 30s, 40s, and older, the efficiency of the production of CoQ10 goes down significantly. What many people don't realize is that the conversion from ubiquinol, conventional coenzyme Q10, to ubiquinol is also compromised. The efficiency of that conversion goes down very significantly from age, let's say, mid-30s on up. And here's what the difference is that when you're in your teens, say, and you're producing plenty of CoQ10, it's converting to ubiquinol very efficiently. If someone was to do a blood test on you and evaluate the amount of CoQ10 that's in your blood and plasma, it would be over 90% ubiquinol. So let me emphasize that. So for any young, healthy, aerobic cell, the predominant form of CoQ10 is the ubiquinol form, which is the electron-rich form, not the oxidized form, which has been on the market for 30 or 40 years. That's the significance of ubiquinol, and we found that through a number of studies over the last decade, is that in many cases, if not all cases, especially when you're over 40 years old, is that the effectiveness of conventional oxidized CoQ10 as a supplement doesn't come anywhere near that as ubiquinol as a supplement.
That's fascinating, and I like the idea that it's essential, truly essential. I mean, something that is endogenously produced when we are young just makes sense that it's going to decline over time.
Sure.
And so you've got to get it after that point, you've got to get it through diet. And if you have the standard American diet, the ability to access that is dramatically reduced. So then we fall to, okay, you need to supplement. And at some point, people, whatever age that might be, when they realize, wow, I don't eat well and I'm getting older. Maybe that turn is 40. Maybe that turn is actually heading south. Maybe it's at 35 nowadays. But some of the research that I read that you produced is this can happen, this conversion of our biology can actually happen lower than 40. You hear that number 40 frequently, 40 years old, but potentially even down to 20 years old. Is that accurate? Am I understanding that correctly?
No, that is correct. And even in your 20s, conversion, you could start going down at any age. Whether you're in your teens or younger, that conversion, the efficiency of that conversion, it is compromised with disease. Disorders, even with stress, after you have a cold, you realize that you're actually fatigued when you have a cold. If you have any type of athletic activity, even when you're young, realize that your stamina is compromised. Say if you were to run laps or that type of thing when you have a cold or a flu. So it's predominantly with age associated, but it is also associated with disease, both acute.
Yeah.
So you could be, it could be any age. If you have diabetes and you're 13 years old, studies have shown us that the CoQ10 levels and especially the ubiquinol ratio is very low.
Wow. So anyone that is starting to head into that territory of age or is compromised. So it's beyond just if you eat the American diet. It's also if you live the American lifestyle.
And absolutely. Stress plays a big part.
Huge role. So, I found that fascinating in the research. Now, the other thing that I found interesting was the reason that ubiquinol and ubiquinone even has that name. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's, like I said, we produce it, and I like the word to use. It's an endogenous moiety. It's a molecule that we produce that every aerobic cell produces. And it's literally in nearly every cell in your body. The requirement is because every cell in your body needs energy in order for growth, development, and maintenance. Regardless whether it's a cardiac cell, a liver cell, a brain cell, a skin cell, all that requires energy for healthy metabolism. That happens through mitochondria, at least 90 to 95% of the ATP, the energy that we get in cellular systems, comes from mitochondria oxidative phosphorylation. CoQ10 and ubiquinol are critical components of the mitochondria and the production of ATP. So it's not this, intangible, esoteric, moiety that we're talking about. It has a very solid place and function in, cellular and metabolic systems.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's if it's pivotal in the role of ATP production, then it's pivotal in the role of living.
Absolutely. It's the two main things are energy, but also cellular protection. That's one thing that ubiquinol also is that conventional coenzyme Q10 isn't. Being the reduced form, and when we say reduced, that just means chemically that it has, it's electron rich. So it has the capability of neutralizing free radicals. Conventional coenzyme Q10 does not.
Right. Tell me a little bit about that. So conventional CoQ10 or ubiquinone has not always been efficient or sufficient to improve outcomes for people that have been taking it. Maybe they even take an abundance of it and they haven't seen a dramatic increase. And maybe for some people, the reason that they're taking it, not to get into any disease states per se, but maybe just to treat fatigue. Right? They haven't had the success. For the purposes of their understanding, why haven't they had that success with just ubiquinone?
Part of the reason is, and we know this now, I'll go back to that in a moment, is because the CoQ10 levels, under metabolic stress are low. And sometimes, depending on, the severity of this disorder, even if it's fatigue, say like chronic fatigue syndrome, CoQ10 levels could be in the basement. But also what's compromised is for the amount of CoQ10 that you have is that conversion rate to ubiquinol is, it's also less efficient. And that's a problem. That's a big problem in terms of energy production. And if you don't have the energy production that you need for, healthy, normal cellular metabolism, you experience fatigue. Supplementation with ubiquinol has been shown to replenish optimal levels of ubiquinol. Conventional CoQ10 supplementation in many cases and in many disorders does not bring the CoQ10 levels and especially the ubiquinol levels up to optimum levels. Remember what I said earlier is that in a healthy aerobic health cellular system, ubiquinol is the predominant form. If that doesn't happen, then you experience fatigue, lack of stamina, etc. And there's been side-by-side studies with conventional coenzyme Q10 and with ubiquinol, where conventional coenzyme Q10, because the conversion rate is impeded, they really didn't see much of a result at all, very little health benefit. But with ubiquinol, those CoQ10 levels were raised to optimum levels and saw a very significant benefit, especially in terms of fatigue and increased stamina.
Yeah, and I want to come back to that. I wanted to diverge for a second, just as you do in your book, about the current prescribed treatment by individuals, certainly not by doctors, for fatigue. In America, right now, the most common choice to treat fatigue is to supplement with the bad guys, as we'll refer to them. Right, it's the fastest growing aisle in the grocery store, and that is energy drinks. But for those of you that maybe believe the kids these days are making all these bad decisions, just keep in mind how many cups of coffee this country has been drinking every morning for a very long time. And you spend some time in your book talking about this cascade that people fall into when choosing caffeine or some other energy boosting stimulant to treat fatigue and why that is so inferior. But could you explain it a little bit for the folks on the podcast today?
Oh, I'll try. But there's a big difference between, caffeines, the sugars and that type of thing. That they're just what you said, they're stimulants. Big difference between that jolt and, that you get, and real cellular energy, which ubiquinol does provide. The stimulants, you get this burst of energy or weight, but if you take, whether it's caffeine, sugar drinks, etc., but if you take too much, then you become agitated, anxious, and irritable. You get the opposite result, and actually it adds to fatigue, and most importantly is that it's very short-lived, and you experience a crash, and then the fatigue sets in even at a stronger level than it had been before. That's the problem with stimulants. Now, moderate caffeine consumption and that type of thing, if you're not experiencing fatigue, or even if you are, it's not a big deal. But when you load up on any of these, it's not a good idea. It'll come back and bite you, and especially in terms of the sugar drinks, that could lead to weight gain, to diabetes, and other problems on top of the fatigue problem.
Right. Well, whereas with ubiquinol, you have a natural energy and support to your cardiac system, right, and help for your heart. On the other side, these stimulants that we just talked about, it can actually lead to abnormal heart rhythm and perhaps even difficulty with your heart.
Right. Yeah. And again, when we say natural cellular energy, remember, as we mentioned previously, this is something that we normally produce in our body. Our body recognizes it and metabolizes it fully. And in terms of cellular energy, though, one thing that people should know that are listening to this is, they reach for the caffeine and the sugar drinks and the stimulants and that type of thing, and, you get the bang, a big a push. You're not necessarily going to experience that by taking ubiquinol right off the bat, although some people say that they do experience, an energy boost with ubiquinol, but it's not everyone. Typically, over the course of a few days, like 3 or 4 or 5 days, you'll start regaining that same type of cellular energy. What we're talking about when we say cellular energy is the type of energy you had when you were, say, in grade school and a teen, that type of cellular energy. It's a big difference from the jolt that you get from the caffeine drinks.
Yeah, and that's a very good point, Doctor, because it challenges people's definitions of what energy may mean. The natural energy that you just have reserves and you can do what you want to do or what you need to do when you want to do it, as opposed to feeling that buzz, if you will.
Right. Sure.
Yeah, interesting.
So... One of the things I wanted to mention, just to make sure that I don't forget. And this helps a lot usually when I talk about the difference between ubiquinone and ubiquinol. A good comparison is most people are very familiar with, I'm sure you are, with vitamin E and vitamin C. Mm-hmm. Very well-known antioxidants. The vitamin C and vitamin E that you buy and take is the reduced electron-rich form. That's the antioxidant. If you were to buy oxidized vitamin C, those pills are usually an off-white color, it would be brown. It'd be oxidized. If you were to buy oxidized vitamin E, I mean, it would literally be rancid. And you wouldn't want to take either one, although you can imagine it. Vitamin C and vitamin E are recycled in our system as well. If you were to take them, you may get some benefit out of them. Your system really pushes out some conversion to the reduced form. That's the difference. But if you were to take the reduced form, then you get its full benefit. That's literally the difference, to put it very simply, between ubiquinol and ubiquinone.
Interesting.
The difference between taking an oxidized vitamin. The reason there's always a discrepancy is that if ubiquinol had been stable enough and had been on the market since the 70s, like ubiquinone, we wouldn't be having this conversation. There'd be no one would sell ubiquinone. They don't sell ubiquinol. And that's literally the difference.
Wow, that's powerful. That's a powerful statement. It's essentially you're buying an oxidized version.
Right.
And hoping your body to make up the difference as it transfers back and forth.
Yeah, because it does convert. And many of the studies that have been shown since the 60s and 70s, both for cardiovascular, in fact, it was used as a drug. The very first commercial use of CoQ10 was as a drug in the late 60s for heart disease, is that when you're younger, 30s, 40s, 20s, is that conversion rate is still there, at least to some degree, depending on, especially in your 20s, start to become compromised, definitely in the 30s and 40s. But there's always been a discrepancy, if you followed some of the literature and the studies on this, is that, in a number of studies, they see a very significant benefit. Then the medical community gets a hold of it, does a large study, and it either comes out neutral or not quite the same. It's always been on the fence. Part of the reason for that is the discussion that we're having here is because many of those people, especially for cardiovascular, that were probably over 50 or 60, had CoQ10 in the basement to begin with in their systems, and conversion rates were so inefficient that they didn't see anything. Part of this is genetic. There could be someone who's in their 50s or 60s where the conversion rate is still reasonable. And I think that's what are some of the differences that we've seen in the literature. Most everything in terms of the studies that have been done to date with ubiquinol show a positive effect.
That's fantastic. That's really good news. Now, you mentioned in there cardiovascular disease and the protection component of ubiquinol. You know, in the United States today, heart disease is still number one. It's the number one killer. And there are a number of different things that contribute to that overall definition of heart disease in this country. But what I find interesting is the impact that ubiquinol could represent for a lot of people that maybe are looking to change their diet, to change the way that they live, to change their lifestyle as well. I think a lot of the associated illness with cardiovascular disease comes up to diet and lifestyle. But it's not just diet and lifestyle. Tell me a little bit about how ubiquinol can benefit someone that has chosen to make some lifestyle and diet changes and enhance their protection for their cardiovascular health.
Well, ubiquinol is very important. All of that's important. I mean, as much as we're, the focus of this talk and all is ubiquinol. But if you don't have a healthy lifestyle, you don't at least have moderate exercise and eat reasonably well, ubiquinol might help. But you're better off with, at least moderate exercise, healthy diet, and with ubiquinol. you'll see a very significant difference. You know, part of the thing is with cardiac health is to kind of understand, you know, what role it would play in cardiac health. And in order to do that, it's necessary to understand the process of energy metabolism in the heart and how ubiquinol is literally, remember, it's one of those critical cofactors in the electron transport chain in the mitochondria for production of ATP. So it's literally the spark plug for energy metabolism within the cell and the production of ATP in the body's primary fuel. In the heart, ATP is used for at least three basic functions. Contraction, that's to keep the heart pumping consistently. Relaxation, to allow the heart to rest between beats. And molecular synthesis, you should call it. This is maintenance, to keep the heart in good repair by building important cellular components. Ubiquinol is just a critical aspect there. The heart is the most energy-demanding organ in our body. Literally, there's more mitochondria per heart cell than any other cell in our system.
And that is to say, if there's more mitochondria in your heart than anywhere else in your system, then there is also more CoQ10.
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. So that's why it's even that much more important, as we mentioned before, is that the decrease in CoQ10 levels just with normal healthy aging go down and that conversion level goes down, you know, the heart's going to be affected. And that's where a good volume of the mitochondria as well as ubiquinol is. So if you see any deficit, it could be very significant.
I find that fascinating. So tell me a little bit about, I told you I wanted to come back to these studies because they're profound. But this idea of the age-related decrease in coenzyme Q10, right? And that using just ubiquinone did not help with outcomes, long-term outcomes. And there was a study. Maybe you can help me remember the name of the study, but the study specifically talking about an easier way to replenish and maintain optimum levels of ubiquinol in your plasma. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Ubiquinol was first made commercially available in around 2006. What's very significant is that since it was not available in volume, it was available, and studies have been done with ubiquinol since the 60s. It was shown to be as strong as an antioxidant as it is by a couple papers published by Bruce Ames in the early 90s. But there really wasn't enough ubiquinol in a supplement form, in a pill form, soft gel form, until 2006. There was one cardiologist that mentioned to me is that, you know, he said, you know, you probably realize, but most don't realize yet, it's 10 years ago, that this is the first time in history that there's enough ubiquinol in a stable form that we could use to actually do clinical trials.
Wow.
And that's when things started to change. There's actually been a number of studies that have shown that, especially in the cardiovascular area, typically, these are with people who are in their 40s and older, typically 60s and older, where CoQ10 production is lower, and the conversion rate is certainly lower, and have found very significant differences between supplementation with ubiquinol as opposed to ubiquinone. You know, one of the, called famous, but one of them I can relate to you that came up relatively early, and this was done with a group of patients in Texas, and these are fairly compromised patients, cardiac patients. They were in a class 4 congestive heart failure category. And those of you that aren't familiar with the semantics of class 4 means that their prognosis is literally about 6 months. So they're very compromised patients. So they're taking a lot of different medications. Now, I'd have to read down here. I have a blurb on it where one of the patients was taking at the time 450 milligrams of conventional coenzyme Q10. The plasma levels were considered subtherapeutic. It was 1.6 micrograms per mil, and this is after 3 years of taking conventional coenzyme Q10. And, of course, he was on a number of other medications as well. They switched, and what an important aspect of this is one of the things that they measure in terms of the heart strength is the an echocardiogram to show the ejection fraction. Mm-hmm. That's with one pump of the heart, the volume that's pumped by the heart. And typically for a normal, healthy adult, that's around 60 to 65%. His ejection fraction was 15%. So,
oh, wow.
So very compromised. And typically that is not, you can't resurrect that. There's no medications. Recently, there's some medications that will help to address that, but at this time, 10 years ago, there wasn't. He was changed. Once ubiquinol became available, this cardiovascular group asked to have some of and to try it because the regular medications that were used for him, he was hospitalized on a regular basis. The ejection fraction wasn't getting better, and he wasn't getting better. So one of the variables was the CoQ10 at a fairly high dose, 150 milligrams. So they thought they'd try the ubiquinol at the exact same dose, and it was very significant. Within a three-month period, remember, he was on conventional coenzyme Q10 for over 3 years at 450 milligrams, at some point 600 milligrams per day, and the highest plasma level is 1.6 micrograms per mil. After 3 months, from I think it was June till September 2006, he was on ubiquinol, same dose, and they checked his plasma levels, of course, regularly, but by September, it went from 1.6 to 6.4 micrograms per mil.
Wow.
It was very significant. But once they saw that, they redid the electrocardiogram. And what they were really excited about was not only what it was, did he have clinical improvement, noticeable clinical improvement, but when they did the echocardiogram again, they found that his ejection fraction had creeped up to 30%. By the end of the first 6 months to a year, it was up to 35 to 40%, and he was able to get rid of, all but a third of the medications that he was on, and he was no longer hospitalized. Now, this is a dramatic case, but this is also the first ubiquinol was first made commercially available to cardiologists. Sometimes this can just be a fluke or, just worked out well for him. Well, they've done a number of studies since then over the past decade. And actually they have, I think it's over 120 patients, all with some variation in terms of the type of heart disease that they have and the type of dosaging they had with CoQ10. But they see very similar results. I mean, it's really exciting stuff.
That's fantastic. That's the stuff that people are looking for. Why? Well, there's your why, folks.
Sure.
That's a big deal.
What a big deal with this is that a lot of researchers that spent their careers on CoQ10 and cardiologists who are very familiar with CoQ10, just didn't believe that ubiquinol was different. And one of the things I should mention is that, quite honestly, when Konica Corporation, once, as you mentioned at the very beginning of this, the largest producers of conventional coenzyme Q10 for a long time, were able to stabilize ubiquinol so it could be put into a soft gel form, they studied it for over a decade before they made it commercially available. And they assumed, and I assumed, once I joined them, it was during that time frame, that, this would be a nice, next generation CoQ10, and it might be a better antioxidant. after some very early studies, and then these type of studies that came out, we realized that we really had a tiger by the tail. You know, it's really night and day, the difference between conventional ubiquinol and ubiquinol.
That's fantastic. Fantastic news. So you also mentioned something else in your book that I wanted to make maybe take a moment to explain to folks, because I've heard some people ask this question. But ubiquinol is redox active. Could you explain to the folks what that means?
Okay. Redox is just an abbreviation. It stands for reduction and oxidation. Now, CoQ10 is actually the same molecule. You had it in front of you. If you take away two electrons, that's called oxidation. You have ubiquinol. If you add two electrons, hydrogens, you have ubiquinol. And then that's called, at least in chemical terms, reduce. These type of redox reactions, it's not just for CoQ10. There's a number of different moieties and molecules in our systems that go through redox cycles that have to do with metabolism and maintenance and that type of thing. So I don't know if that helps, but basically redox means is the transfer of electrons to either reduce or oxidize.
Going back and forth, back and forth in the system.
Yeah. But one of the things you should remember is that oxidation is bad. That's the same thing. It's literally, you know, we talked about, you've heard the term before about as you grow older, you get you rust.
Yeah.
That's what oxidation is. And they found now is that NIH is starting to use the ubiquinol ratio as a marker of aging. And there's very few formal markers of aging. Because, as I mentioned before, is that the higher the oxidized level of CoQ10 in your blood, the more oxidative stress you're under. Higher the level of ubiquinol, the reduced form, then just the opposite. You know, a lot of people have heard the terms free radical and oxidative stress and oxidative insult, but if you were to ask them what's the opposite of that, usually you don't get an answer. It's the reduced form. It's the reduced state. The healthy cellular state is the reduced state. That's what ubiquinol brings to you.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was actually, that was going to be the next question that I asked. In many ways, your levels of ubiquinol are similar. There's a lot of study right now and discussion of telomeres and telomere length being a definition of your age. But I suppose ubiquinol in your system, as it goes through this redox activation, right, that would also be indicative of where you're at in your ability to endogenously produce ubiquinol from inside, right?
Sure. That brings to mind some of the studies that have been done is, and we weren't sure why this worked this way. You know, of course, there's been a lot of studies that do direct comparisons of conventional coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol, just to see what the differences are. You know, if there's a greater benefit to ubiquinol, but also what happens when you ingest it. And one of the important subjects was bioavailability. And it's been found that in almost every study to date with ubiquinol, bioavailability is higher. Just wonder, well, you know, why is that? It is a bit more what's called polar because it has hydroxyl groups on it as opposed to conventional coenzyme Q10. And it could explain some of it. But there's been some studies that have been done now that are accumulating, and it's just really fascinating. One of the early studies was to compare the bioavailability of ubiquinol, conventional coenzyme Q10, and ubiquinol with young healthy people and older healthy people. Younger healthy people were, say, in their mid to late 20s. And older were 60 to 80 years old. And they were given the same dose of ubiquinol. And then later on, after a washout period, the same dose of ubiquinol. And then, of course, they tested their blood levels to see what the difference was. You know, the short answer to the study was that in both cohorts, ubiquinol had higher levels of bioavailability, but it was much greater in the older group. In the younger group, you know, it was slightly better. In the older group, it was dramatically better. And again, this was a healthy older group. One of the things that we realized since then in a number of studies that have been done is that it's based on metabolic demand. It has a lot to do with the bioavailability. I mean, if you just take a powdered form, it's not going to be as bioavailable as something that's in a lipid mix, an oil mix, because it is a lipid-soluble cofactor. But it's very fascinating that when you're 40, 50, 60, 70 years old and healthy, the absorption of ubiquinol goes up. CoQ10 doesn't, but ubiquinol does.
Right. So what? So when you're bulletproof, everything's fine.
Yeah.
but as soon as you put a few years on that equipment, things could change. Things could change very quickly. Well, fascinating. I wanted to talk just before we go here. Our product is Energize. And part of the reason for that naming is exactly what we've discussed on this podcast today. That is that it's energized in terms of the ability to produce energy. It's not just the cardiovascular support. It's not just antioxidant protection, but it's also literally your ability to produce energy. In that mix, in that product, of which this is the rock star, we have a 100 milligram dose. Talk to folks a little bit about a 100 milligram dose and if that's, you know, a good thing.
Okay. A lot of the studies, and of course that was another important subject, was, you know, what's an effective dose? And most of the studies have shown the following. Let's say that you're currently not taking any form of coenzyme Q10 and haven't been for a while. If you were to take ubiquinol and for about 3 weeks at 200 milligrams per day, ubiquinol level in your plasma would plateau about 2 or 3 weeks. You actually start feeling it and you know, experiencing the energy difference in about 4 or 5 days. But it takes about 2 to 3, sometimes 4 weeks for those plasma levels to optimize. After that, 100 milligram dose a day is perfect. For me, see, if you're not under excessive stress or suffer from acute or chronic disease, 100 milligrams of ubiquinol is typically what most people take. So the 100 milligrams in your formulation is in a combination with some other things is a perfect dose, daily dose.
Great. Get up to speed and then maintain it with a 100 milligram dose.
Right. Great. And one of the things that should be mentioned, and we haven't addressed during the course of this talk, and I do want to throw in, is that safety factor. Conventional coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol have an envious safety record. There's literally no known significant drug-drug interactions, even with things like Coumadin with ubiquinol. It's been used up to 3,000 milligrams a day, actually higher, in many studies with no adverse effects.
Wow. That's it helps when it's seems to be that prevalent throughout your system. Maybe that's why. But that's really good news for those of you that are looking at that in the face as we all get a little bit older here. Good news. Well, Doctor, I really, really am grateful for your time to participate in our podcast today. Everybody, please take a chance. If you're listening to this podcast, don't let it end here. Go and download a copy of The Power of Ubiquinol, The Key to Energy, Vitality, and a Healthy Heart by Dr. Robert Berry. He knows his stuff. He knows what he speaks. And if you intend to help share this story with other people, to help them understand how to take charge of their own health, particularly their own cardiovascular health, this would be a great tool for you to use. So get a copy, get in front of it, learn it, and be able to present it well and maybe even share this podcast. Dr. Berry, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our New Earth podcast today. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me once again. It's always a pleasure. And if I could throw one reference out there, since most people are on their computers today, is It's called ubiquinol.org. So ubiquinol.org is devoted specifically to ubiquinol. It has a lot of the information that we've talked about today and much more, including clinical trials, are on there.
Excellent. And that's a great resource for some of the clinical trials that have happened that we didn't get a chance to talk about on this call. But many of them, I think the folks will find illuminating, to be sure. So once again, thank you, Dr. Barry, and thank you to all of our podcast listeners.